Good evening. Welcome back. My goal tonight is not to present a formal shiur, but to offer some food for thought, like the title suggests. We transition from what I trust was a meaningful and beautiful Yom Tov back to the rigors of our regular routines and our schedules. How exciting. Now that Yom Tov is behind us, what are some of the thoughts, some of the feelings that should be going through our minds? How can the lessons of Pesach help to inform us the days and the weeks ahead? Is there a way to assess the spiritual gains that we've made over the recent Chag? And how can we use those gains to propel us forward to maintain the spiritual momentum through Shavuos and beyond? I speak about post-Pesach reflections, and unfortunately, this year, the reflections post-Pesach are intermingled with sadness, with grief, in light of the tragic events that took place this past Shabbos, Achron Shel Pesach, in Poway, California. Events like this shatter our sense of security and generate feelings of anxiety, and rightfully so. As we feel the pain of this atrocity, it's also valuable to put it in a larger perspective, through the prism of the Haggadah. What I'm about to tell you is probably very obvious. And yet, as Ramchal writes in Mesilas Yesharim in the introduction, what is obvious sometimes deserves to be stated and restated. Anti-Semitism is nothing new. It has a long and dark history. And as much as we expend efforts to eradicate it, and certainly we have to do so, it is not likely to disappear anytime soon. We say in the Vehisha Amda, Shebechol dor vador onde malenu l'chaloseinu. The idea of l'chaloseinu is not limited to the notion of genocide. It also represents an ideology. And the ideology doesn't exist in a vacuum. It latches on to any number of forces that exist in a given society, be it religious, cultural, political, sociological, across the spectrum, left, right, seemingly noble causes, which conveniently mask the underlying Jew hatred, to the extent that often even the people themselves are unaware of the underlying anti-Semitism. Just a few days ago, I don't know if you noticed, the New York Times ran a cartoon, a blatantly anti-Semitic cartoon in its international edition, which they subsequently apologized for. The Haggadah offers us a window into understanding the sentiment that underlies anti-Semitism. Just after Vehisha Amda, we segue into the section of Mikra Bikurim, those psukim from Parshas Kisavo. And the section begins with the words, Arami Oved Avi. We preface our elucidation of these psukim with the word, Seyu Lamad. Ma Bikesh Lavan Harami Lasos Liyakov Avinu. Lavan is a prototypical anti-Semite. And the dynamic of Lavan and how he sought to undermine Yaakov and ultimately to kill him serves as a blueprint for the history of Jew hatred throughout the ages. Think about it. Yaakov prospered in Lavan's house, Vayifrotzaish Ma'od Ma'od, and it aroused jealousy. It aroused the kinah of Lavan. Lavan's children are overheard saying, Lokach Yaakov Eis Koshe Lavinu. In other words, the Jews' success comes at our expense. When we have less, whose fault is it? It's the Jews' fault. When people feel empty and unfulfilled, they look for a scapegoat. And that scapegoat is oftentimes the Jew. And we see this idea again in the Haggadah, when it discusses the origin of Paro's plan to enslave the Jews. We quote the pasuk, Vayareu Osanu Hamitzrim, And then we associate that pasuk with another pasuk. Masha Nemar, Hava Nischak Malo. At first glance, what's the connection? By Yireh Hashem, it means they did evil to us, right? Hava Nischak Malo is how he planned and how he schemed. The Mepharshim tell us that Vayarei Osanu actually doesn't mean that they harmed us. Then it would say Vayarei Lanu. Vayarei Osanu means they demonized us. They portrayed us as bad, as evil. And that's what occurs repeatedly throughout history. Whether it's the Hadrianic persecutions, the Spanish expulsion, the Chmelnytsky massacres, and the Holocaust. The people, the places, the circumstances might differ, but it's always the same underlying dynamic. In America, we've grown accustomed and complacent, perhaps, into thinking it's different here. It's not America. But you know, statistics have shown, I think there was an article not too long ago in the New York Times about it, there's a dramatic increase in anti-Semitism worldwide. 6 months ago, we had the massacre in the Pittsburgh synagogue, and now, 2 days ago, in Poway, California. The Hisha Amda doesn't just refer to past history, the generation of our parents and our grandparents. It speaks to us in the here and now. And not just in Israel, where we've grown accustomed to living with a certain degree of fear, but here in America. And it's unsettling to hear this. It makes us feel powerless and frustrated. And how can we counter some of these feelings of discomfort without denying the source of its existence? It's easy just to deny. Imagine it wasn't here, but it is. It's not going away. So we need to mechazik ourselves, our emunah in Hashem, and our faith in humanity. How can we do this? One way is to remind ourselves that zeh l'umah zeh asa ha'elokim. Just as evil exists in the world, so does goodness exist side by side. And it's incumbent upon us to seek out those sources of goodness. I was watching yesterday the poignant press conference given by Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein. I don't know this Rabbi Goldstein personally, but it was something extraordinary to see. A rabbi, even after having been shot in the hand, which required 4 hours of surgery, which when he lost one of his index fingers, he still managed to offer words of comfort to his congregants and to guide the children to safety before being rushed himself to the hospital. Incredible. Here you have evil and you have goodness side by side. Another way, we have to be no se ba'ol. We have to share the burdens faced by our fellow Jews. The Torah highlights this trait with Moshe Rabbeinu as a youngster. Vayetze el echav, vayar b'sivlosam. He commiserated with the plight of his brethren. One of the central messages of Yetzias Mitzrayim that the Torah emphasizes repeatedly is that we have to learn to champion the cause of the underdog. When people are in society, not the underdogs, almana, the yasom, widow, orphan, the ger, we have to remember that we were also that. We were in Mitzrayim, we suffered, and we have to empathize with those who are suffering. It's especially true when tragedy strikes the Jewish community, any segment of the Jewish community. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. We have to feel the solidarity, we have to feel the pain. Another message that we can take from Pesach is that we need to strengthen our emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and have a deeper level of hakaras hatov for all that he does for us constantly. Matzah is known as the bread of emunah. Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim not knowing what they're going to eat. Zachati lo chesed nuraich, lechtich acharei bamidbar be'eretz lo zerua. The miracle Kriyas Yamsuf brought about by Yaminu Bashem of Moshe Avdo. even if we live in trying and challenging times, even as we commiserate with the tragedy, the horrible tragedy that occurred a few days ago, we have to also look and recognize the silver lining. Rabbi Goldstein noted this as well in the press conference. Things could have been far, far, far worse. Rachmana litzlan. Baruch Hashem, the gun jammed, and those inside, including many children, had the extra few minutes to find refuge. We could just attribute that to chance. Or we could consciously, and we should consciously, acknowledge the Yad Hashem, to be grateful for the fact that more lives were not lost. Baruch Hashem, most of us have not experienced, I would hope, such difficult trauma, such dramatic trauma, although, who knows, maybe some of you in some way or another. But certainly all of us, myself included, have experienced or will experience incidents that take us by surprise and that have painful consequences. And as we struggle with our own life challenges, we have to work on finding that silver lining also, to recognize the Yad Hashem that guides us, that watches over us, even at times like this. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzileinu miyada. If we can maintain that sense of emuna and hakaras hatov, it becomes possible to channel that frustration into a positive energy in a constructive direction. And finally, Pesach also teaches us the importance of taking concrete action to demonstrate our convictions, not just to think about it. B'nai Yisrael were commanded before they left Mitzrayim to take the Karban Pesach as a visible and concrete way of affirming their emunah. During the night of Makas Bechoros, they were commanded to celebrate, have their own Seder, and celebrate their impending Geula, even though it didn't happen yet. But they demonstrated their faith that it's going to happen, and there they were, having their Seder. Emunah, by definition, implies a certain leap of faith. It hasn't happened yet, but we trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on our side, He'll come through for us, and we show it through our actions. That point was also made by Rabbi Goldstein. I was also so struck by everything he said, the poise that he had after having experienced this. And he implored his fellow Jews for women to light candles Friday night, for those who don't usually attend shul to attend synagogue services this Shabbos in solidarity. Nope, for those of us who are doing it anyway, hopefully we would, there must be something extra that we can take on as well. Whether bin adam la'makom, bin adam la'chavero, it behooves us, every one of us, to introspect, to become part of some communal enterprise, to do more, to choose something that's in consonance with our own trajectory of avodas Hashem, of spiritual growth, and to express what we know to be true, but to do it in action. And finally, one more point. We need to always daven for the continued safety of our brothers and sisters everywhere, that we be spared any such incidents in the future, and we continue to be beneficiaries of Hashem's kindness, even as we know that the specter of anti-Semitism exists in the world around us. As cliched as it may sound, events like this remind us that we are one Jewish community. We need to actively see ourselves as connected to Jews everywhere. These are some of the post-Pesach reflections as it pertains to current events. I want to turn now briefly to the other part of the title, maintaining spiritual commitment or momentum as we go toward Shavuos and beyond. Let's focus on this in terms of our personal paths in Avodas Hashem. Each one of us experienced Baruch Hashem, a Yantif, a Chag. We did many wonderful mitzvos. We sat at a Seder, we ate matzah, we sang Hallel, we told the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Over the course of Pesach, we had entirely spiritual experience in one form or another. Hopefully we were inspired. Okay, so how sure can we be that we really advanced spiritually? Maybe it was sort of just, but it was, you know, basically a different menu, but basically nothing changed. We just went through 8 days of, you know, slightly changed our schedule a little bit. How do we know that really something changed within us? How can we be more in touch with what we gained? How can we hold on to it? How can we use that as a springboard to build further momentum? And again, what I share with you now is not a share, it's food for thought. I want to give you a framework for thinking about it. As they say, I speak to myself. If you want to listen in, feel free to eavesdrop. So first of all, how do we know that we've changed? So the answer is, I'll tell you, if we experience the Pesach, we've been transformed. Cannot be otherwise. Everything that we do in connection to a Yom Tov that celebrates our very identity, the birth of our nation, everything that we do that taps into that does something for us, for our neshama, for our essence. If we cleaned our house, if we did the Bidikas Chametz, if we cleaned and put a lot of effort into it, whether it was exactly what halacha demands, whether it was over and above, because that's what our mothers and grandmothers did, it's all good. That sweat, those tears, Rabbi Lev Yitzchak said, they create malachim. He could see it. I can't. It changed us. The Pesach cleaning. If we went away, we didn't clean much, but we sat at the Seder, we didn't eat chametz for 8 days, we ate matzah. Everything, saying Hallel, everything that we went through did something. It transformed us. It drew us closer to Hashem. It set up a dynamic process, which for sure creates momentum. The question is, what do we do with that momentum? No, the word regel, which means festival, right? Shalosh regalim. You know what else it means? Regel. Regel means foot, which connotes movement. That's perhaps because the experience of a regel is meant to move us forward. I once heard the name of Moshe Shapiro, Zatzal, the word zman, in a similar way. The word zman, which means time, is from the Russian of hazmana, to prepare. Because every moment prepares what comes afterwards. It, again, it sets up a process, a dynamic, a momentum. So how do we capitalize on this momentum? First, we have to acknowledge that we've gained something. That's a given. Okay, so then what? Then what? We need to want for it to continue. We have to desire that it should continue. I once saw a beautiful explanation of an expression we use in our davening before Shema at night, the bracha just before Shema. The words are be'ahavascha, al tosir mimenu le'olamim. So we usually translate that to mean that Hashem, you love us, Abbas Olam, Beis Yisraam, Chahavta, you love us. Yehavascha, al tosir mimenu le'olamim. You should not remove that love that you have for the Jewish people forever. So I saw the following. One of the Svarim, I think it was, maybe connected to the one, the Ger Hasidim, I don't remember who was it that wrote it, but I saw this not too long ago. The Havascha means not Hashem, your love for us, but our love for you. That love, that we love you, that we feel love to you, we feel its connection to you, al tasim imenu. Don't remove it. Don't let it fade. Don't let it disappear. Let it stay with me. Let it stay with us. We want him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to help preserve those emotions. So we have to want for it to continue, number one. Okay, that's not enough. Then we need to reinforce it. We need to find ways to reinforce those feelings. And I'll give you an example of this idea. Pesach night, we fulfill a mitzvah called Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. What do? We speak at length about the story. We delve into the psukim. We elaborate, we talk about all different aspects of the Golas Mitzrayim, the Geulah Mitzrayim. Now, every day of the year, we also have a mitzvah, And that's called Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. We mentioned one paragraph in Haggadah, the mitzvah is Yom Tizkor, Es Kol Yimecha Yacha. Then Zoma explains it's every day and every night. What does that mean? It's a separate mitzvah. So what's unique about Pesach? So Chaim and others made this idea famous that there's obviously a lot of differences between Zechira and Sipur. Zechira is a mention. We mentioned it in Shema, Asher Tzeis Chameres Mitzrayim. That's every day and every night. But Sipur is more than just a mention. It's elaborating on it. It's through question and answer. It has all kinds of aspects that make it much larger experience than just a passing reference. But yet, the fact that we have Zechira every day is not just separate and distinct from the Sipur of Leil Pesach, but what it's really doing, it's taking the experience of Leil Pesach, which was intense, with all that Sipur entails, and it's allowing us to keep it going until we get to next year Pesach. So that we're taking just the mention of Yetzias Mitzrayim every day and every night, and allowing ourselves to reconnect in a small way to all that Sipur brought out when we spent the entire Seder involved with that. So think about it. It's not just Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's any time we might mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in whatever context. Kiddush Friday night, second bracha of benching, Al-Shesh Lissano Hashem Okenim Eretz Mitzrayim. What can happen then? We can associate that with everything that we felt on Pesach. Pesach, we connected in some way. Ki'ihu Yatzim Mitzrayim. We felt the idea of being liberated in some form. We felt connected. We had the visual aids. And now, any other time of the year, we can access, and it keeps us connected to that vision just by tapping in, just by referencing it, even though it's just in a short, succinct way. It's like you have a close family member who lives far away. They're always on your mind. But then you have a get-together every year. You spend some quality time with them. And then the rest of the year, you don't see them, but you can say hello. You have a quick chat. You don't see them, but you have a way to connect. And when you connect with them, even if it's not as much of a chavaya as when you get together in person, but what it does is it reignites those feelings of love and connection that you have that are obviously visible and palpable when you're there having the face-to-face. So again, so throughout the year, we need to constantly remind ourselves, invoke for ourselves those ideas that are central to who we are, that are connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. We can't take it for granted that they're going to stay with us, that they won't fade. We need to make a conscious effort to keep those ideas alive. And we also need to ask Hashem to help us do it. V'avaschal tashim imenu olamim. I'm sure that we all try to have more kavanah in our davening in whatever way. There are many nice classes here of Shor and Tefillah. I give a class in Tefillah. But separate from any of that, the very fact that you're saying the words, and the words are there in front of you, just to allow yourself to connect with those words is itself keeping the momentum. You don't have to necessarily look outside of your regular routine. Within your own built-in schedule, you have the equivalent of the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is a way of connecting to the bigger experience of what all that represents. Now, talking about Pesach, moving on from Pesach, we have a halachic mechanism in place that really is meant to keep the momentum going, and that's Sefiras HaOmer. Sefiras HaOmer creates a bridge between Pesach and Shavuos. Now, I mean, even if you just do nothing more than count and make it through the 49, you're ready. You can be proud of yourself. Not an easy task. It's easy to, you know, to miss. But how wouldn't it even be more meaningful if we could take each day of Sefiras HaOmer and anchor it into something specific that will allow us to reinforce and to keep the momentum going? All of those particular things that you can identify in Pesach that brought you, that uplifted you. So take every day of Sefiras HaOmer and make that an opportunity to allow ourselves to connect in that small way to everything that we want to hold on to. And that allows us, again, to bridge Pesach and Shavuos in that manner. Counting the Omer is about making every day count. And in a larger way as well, the connection to Pesach and Shavuos is a very fundamental one. Hashem said to Moshe at the Sinai, burning bush, that when you take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, Tavdun Esrael Kim Al Horazeh. The goal, the purpose of Yitzias Mitzrayim was in order to get to Sinai to Matan Torah. Pesach is a spiritual stepping stone for Shavuos. The goal of Yitzias Mitzrayim, as we said, was to accept the Torah. What does that mean? What's the takeaway message of that? Zman Cheruseinu. Pesach is liberation. Pesach is freedom. But what is freedom? Freedom is the fact that we don't have to work for Paro. Freedom has to be channeled into something concrete. It has to have its own focus. Eric Fromm used to speak about freedom from and freedom to. Freedom from is just not to have the pressures that I had to deal with before. Freedom to is now that I have the opportunity to do what I want. What do I do with it? What do I do with my time? Kal Yisrael were given the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh right before they left Mitzrayim, because now the time is their own. So then, it's not up to them. They have to do whatever the taskmasters tell them to do. Now that you have time, you have to sanctify time. Now we have 7 weeks. Every day and every week is calling out to us, make the most of me. Shalach es ami v'yavduni. It's not just to get out of Mitzrayim, it's for a purpose. And that's what Matan Torah fits in. Yitzias Mitzrayim itself was accompanied by mitzvos, as we mentioned before, Kavan Pesach, eating matzah. They were given these mitzvos before Matan Torah, just as part of the experience of Yitzias Mitzrayim. They were already given the first installment, you could say, of mitzvos of Tayag. Then you get to the end of Parshas Bo, more mitzvos, sanctifying the firstborn, tefillin. You get a little bit further along, Parshas B'Shalach, in Mara, more mitzvos. They get Shabbos. Shabbos was before Matan Torah. Kibbut Aveim, Dinim. In other words, freedom has to be accompanied by responsibility, by obligations. Otherwise, it's not real freedom. That's what the Chazal is telling us in Pirkei Avos. Ein lecha ben chorin, ela mi she'osek b'Torah. A true free person is a person who is involved in Torah. I want to conclude with a quote from Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav, who expressed this idea on a very existential and psychological level. It was an essay entitled On Freedom and Slavery. It's published in Reflections of the Rav, Volume 1. And I think if we can internalize this principle, it really will allow us to maintain the spiritual awareness that we're all looking for. Here's what he writes. This may seem paradoxical. How can a man be free if he surrenders his freedom? An analysis of man's existential condition will be helpful. Is man ever truly free? Is he not a prisoner of natural law, subject to the caprices of his state of health, the intrusion of accidents, and the ever-hovering specter of possible death? These are physiological constraints. Man is also subject to social pressures, the mores of his society, the biases of his family, the prejudices of his class. In reality, supposedly free man is buffeted, pressured, coerced, and restricted in his options, even if no human taskmaster hovers over him. These forces warp his initiatives and deprive him of real freedom. And then he goes on, and he says, in surrendering to God, man truly achieves freedom. He's no longer tormented by psychologically depressing anxieties about his health or the specter of death. the world is under the rulership of a beneficent God, and we achieve an identification with him by following his teachings. Man is thereby equipped to cope with all hostile and threatening forces. He's bolstered by his faith in a transcendental orderliness of things and in God's ultimate compassion. This one basic fear of God, more precisely awe-inspiring reverence, removes all other fears. To surrender to God, therefore, brings more freedom, not less. We should all be zocheh to internalize these very important messages, to recognize how privileged you all are to have a chevra of others who are also seeking to grow and maintain spiritual momentum together. Thank you all for listening.